You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the kid counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a question from Katie in Florida. Hello, fellow Floridian, and other coast though, but still Floridian nonetheless. And her question is about kids that at a certain point in the process seem unsure of what they want to do, and they tend to gravitate toward the same type of play. And she's wondering about how to handle that. She's a little bit unsure of it. So I'll read parts of her email and then we'll dive in. Before I do, huge thank you to all of you who have been a part of the collective and who have been posting and attending the Zoom calls. It has just been so much fun to share that with you, and the passion and the excitement and the collaboration and the support. It's just been so fun for me, and I'm so grateful for each and every one of you. If you haven't checked that out, I would love to have you join us. You can check it out for free and get a 2-week free trial just to see if it's going to be something that is helpful for you. If you would like to check it out, go to ccptcollective.com and you can get your free trial and see what it's like, ask me questions live twice a week, and hang out with a whole bunch of other CCPTs. So just wanted to say thank you to all the collective members. You all make my week fun and special. So I appreciate you all. Thank you to all of you podcast listeners as well. I know that is a much broader group and that is very, very spread out all over the world. So super grateful for each and every one of you for the time that you listen to me each week. I've had so many people in the last few weeks on calls or, you know, during the discovery call process for the coaching program, whatever. I've been talking to a whole bunch of you and you keep saying that I am in your ears all the time and you constantly hear my voice. So thank you that you take me with you and that you spend time with me. And I'm glad that you feel like we have a connection because I love the intimacy of podcasting. I really do think of each and every one of you when I do these. Like, I feel like I'm just talking to my friends, and I hope that you feel that way. And I love being able to just connect on that very personal level. So thank you to all of you, all my coaching participants, my collective people, my podcast listeners. You all are special to me, and I'm very grateful to be on this journey with you. All right, back to the question. So let me read parts of this, and then we'll dive into some thoughts. So the question is, I've been honing my craft toward using only child-centered play therapy with my child clients, as I was originally trained in more directive methods. Surprise, surprise. Lately, I've been struggling with the same thing amongst two different clients. I noticed that after 15 or so sessions, they seem unsure of what they want to do, and eventually they play the same game. So when they come in, they tend to get bored after a few passes, and I find myself getting anxious that they aren't using miniatures or figurines to play house, make a battle, expand into other toys that they haven't tried, etc. I feel these clients are past the warm-up stage, and of the clients I'm referencing, one always gravitates toward kinetic sand, and one goes for the game heads up. I like that game. I share a playroom with multiple therapists, and the owner prefers to keep all the toys in bins, so most things have a lid on them with labels. I'm wondering if this is stopping their process, though the lids and bins don't seem to prevent other clients from moving through the models, stages, and phases. Thank you. All right, Katie, thanks for the email, and thanks for asking this question. I think this is something that all of us struggle with until we get to a point where we are fully trusting of the entire process. And sometimes it's easy to trust parts of the process, but not others. And I think when we get to a point where we have achieved full trust and complete trust, it eliminates that pressure from us and we're able to just kind of be patient enough for kids to do their work. But we'll kind of unpack some thoughts that I have together just so that it gives a little bit more specificity to what this issue is discussing. So we really can't assume why a child is seeming to not engage at the beginning and then gravitates toward the same thing, but it's usually one of a few options. So it can be resistance. Now, granted, 15 sessions in, that's a little bit late in the process for it to be resistance, but it is not impossible. I guess my question or my curiosity would be, has there been evidence of already going through resistance? And if so, then this is likely not resistance. But if there's been no evidence of it, it could be. So we'll throw out resistance as an option. It can also be avoidance. And what I mean by that is sometimes even though kids have gone through the initial stage and phase and then they've hit the resistance phase, they might still not be ready to do what they need to do. So they are doing safe play. They're doing controlled play. They're doing predictable play. And it's essentially to avoid the deeper work that needs to be tackled. So often kids will delay their work. It's not that they're necessarily in resistance anymore, but it is that they are trying to hold off as long as possible because they don't feel ready. And that's where that safe type of play comes in. And Katie, what you're describing, sand work and game, those are both very predictable and safe. So I suspect that that's probably likely that the child feels unwilling or unable to dive into what they need to do. And so they're trying to bide time. And when that happens, it's not that they're not doing work. It's not that what they're doing is not meaningful. It's not that they're not still on the process and the journey. But what it means is they are stalling and hoping that they're going to feel more ready. So that is my first thought as to why these kids might be kind of what you seem to be avoiding. What you seem to be mentioning is that they seem unsure of what to do and then going to the same game. It's predictable and it's safe. Okay, my second thought is we have to make sure we don't get ourselves caught in a trap of thinking that a child has to play. We understand that the child-centered model is predicated on kids will naturally play, and that's the way that they make sense of their world. So of course, in a playroom and in child-centered play therapy, it's kind of assume that kids will play. However, a child does not have to play for this to work. A child does not have to play for this to be beneficial. A child does not have to play to move through the things that they need to address. So we have to be careful that we don't get caught up in our own sense of expectations. We don't have expectations in a child-centered model. There's no mandates, there's no requirements, there's no expectations, there's no agenda. A child is free to do what the child needs to do, when they need to do it, how they need to do it, and we have to be okay with that. So here's where the trust factor comes in. Not only do we have to trust the CCPT process, it starts there. Do we believe this works? Do we believe this is effective? Do we believe that the things that are supposed to happen will happen? If all of those answers are yes, then we can scale back the anxiety. We can scale back the self-imposed pressure. We can scale back the need to have things go a certain way. And Katie, I totally understand what you're saying. When I read that and you said, they're not using miniatures, they're not using figurines, they're not playing house, they're not making a battle, they're not expanding into other toys. Well, I think we all have been in that situation where it's like, why aren't you doing X, Y, Z, right? Why aren't you doing something in the sand? Why aren't you using miniatures? Why aren't you doing narrative play? Why aren't you engaging in some kind of capacity? When a child breaks the mold a little bit and does not follow what we would consider to be the traditional trajectory of therapy, it is really difficult to not try to somehow force that because we're like, but you should be, right? But a child shouldn't be doing anything. If we trust the process, we then also trust the child. And this is the next key of this. We have to trust child-centered play therapy. We also have to trust the child. Do we believe in self-actualization or not? Do we believe that the child knows their issues and they know their struggles and they will address them in their way, their time, and at their pace? Do we believe that kids don't want to stay stuck? Do we believe kids want to become a better version of themselves? Do we believe kids should be the master of their own therapeutic journey? If the answers to those are yes, then again, burden and pressure are off because we're able to sit back and say, child-centered play therapy works. I trust this child. I trust the process. And if all he wants to do is come in and play Kinetic Sand right now, there's a reason for it. And let me actually share a really quick story, because I think this might help illustrate this point a little bit more succinctly. So Robert Jason Grant is the founder of the Ought Play program or model. He specializes in kids on the spectrum, and he kind of has a unique take on play therapy specifically for children on the spectrum. And that's the bulk of his clientele. And while his Ought Play program is not child-centered, and I mean, I guess maybe there's a little bit of overlap, but it's not a child-centered approach. In his book, he talked about a child with whom he worked that came in and vacuumed with the little Fisher-Price or whatever, you know, brand fake vacuum. By the way, related aside, one of my favorite toys was the little balls that popped in the clear dome vacuum. You would push it and it would make all of the colored balls pop like popcorn underneath the little plastic globe. And you could watch them pop. And every time you pushed the vacuum forward, it made everything pop inside like popcorn. That was one of my favorite toys. So that just brings back nostalgic memories for me. But anyway, I digress. So all this child did was use the pretend vacuum and vacuumed every single session. And he talks in the book about his struggle with that and the difficulty of that and questioning that and all of it. And then the summary to kind of give you, you know, the Cliff's Notes is, I realized that that child needed to come in and vacuum every week. And I needed to just allow the child to do what the child needed to do. So we have to trust, Katie, that if a child's coming in and playing with kinetic sand every week, that's what they need to do. If a child comes in and wants to play heads up every week, that's what they need to do. And sometimes it's because they're unwilling or unable to move forward, but that still doesn't mean that they're not doing work. It means that they're preparing to do their work. Hey, this is all I can do right now. This is all I can handle, all I can manage. This is all I've got. I can come and play a game with you. I can come and play with sand. And I'm warming up to the idea that I'm going to have to dive in and work through this junk. And I'm preparing myself and I'm testing if I'm brave enough. And I'm talking myself into this. And I know that it's coming, but right now I'm just not able to do that yet. But what I can do is come play with sand. What I can do is play heads up with you. And that is still valuable. And it's still what the child needs. Because what the child doesn't need is to be forced, coerced, bribed, convinced, you know, guided, directed. That's not what the children need in these cases. They need unconditional acceptance. They need whole child-centeredness. And eventually they'll go, okay, I'm ready to give this a shot. But until then, just because they're not, quote, playing, which by the way, they are, kinetic sand and heads up, they are playing. We need to reconstruct what we consider to be playful. But that aside, it doesn't mean that they're not playing and therefore not working. They're doing both. And we have to reframe that in our own heads. And then finally, not really related to your specific question, but since you mentioned that the owner prefers to keep all the toys in bins, I just want to make this as kind of a public service announcement to everyone out there, because I'm sure there are lots and lots of you that don't have full autonomy over your spaces. You don't have control over all of your toys or the way that they're set up or, you know, whatever. Your playrooms are not always your own, and I understand that. The CCPT way is that toys are visible, inviting, and accessible. So, Katie, I understand the dilemma of not being able to necessarily create the playroom that you wish you could have, but I do encourage you to speak to the owner and help the owner understand why they need to be out, why they need to be visible, why they need to be accessible. It's really, really important that a child can see what they can play with, because sometimes they don't know what they're going to play with, but when they look at something, they're drawn to it. They see it and it sparks a creative storyline, or it sparks an imaginative play, or it reminds them of something and they gravitate toward it. If it's in a bin, they have a whole different process. They actually have to go explore. And you know what? Sometimes kids don't have the wherewithal to explore. if they're really burdened and heavy and stressed and emotional and overwhelmed, the last thing they want to do is dig through bins. So just as a general rule, toys need to be visible, accessible, and inviting. So just be mindful as much as possible. Keep things out, and the less contained, the less put away, the less boxed, whatever, the better. So that's just my final thought. But I want to give a little bit of encouragement for those of you going, oh no, you know, this is terrible. I'm not going to be able to do that. And now that basically means that my playroom isn't effective. Don't do that to yourself. Let me give you a little bit of encouragement. The good news is kids don't know that it could be different. So it's not like they're comparing your playroom to the vast number of other playrooms they've been in, right? So kids will make do with what they have to play with and how it's arranged. So they don't know that in my playroom, everything is out on shelves and visible to the naked eye. All right. So don't feel defeated or frustrated in some way that you can't have the playroom that you want. Do as much as you can to make it as closely aligned with CCPT as possible. And then beyond that, it's okay. And kids will work with what they have. They don't know any better. They don't know it could be different. So they're not pining away every day that they have to go through bins. They just think that that's how the playroom works. So it's okay in whatever state it is, but as much as you have control over that, work to make it as child-centered as possible. All right, y'all. Thank you for your time this week. Sorry that it was a little bit late. We had a very busy week and I'm a little bit behind, but thanks for your patience. For those of you in the States, happy Memorial Day. This is Memorial Day weekend, so I hope that you have a wonderful time. And I look forward to being with you next week. And again, check out the collective if you're not already in there. It's an awesome place. If you're interested in the coaching program, there's a couple spots left. Playtherapypro.com will get you information about that. All right, love y'all. Talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.